All right, welcome to a special Sunday edition of Filmcore. We'll be breaking down the massive success that is Deadpool. I'm Alex Kirschbaum here in LA. I'm joined in Chicago by Armani Barone. Hello, Armani.
Hi, how's it going?
Great, great. And Emily Schick. Hello, Emily.
Hi.
Deadpool is a big hit. It's made $300 million and counting, the third R-rated movie to have ever done that domestically. And then worldwide, it's made $670+ million. And clearly the biggest hit of the year thus far, although the year is young. It seems like people generally enjoy that it's sort of a meta Marvel yes. movie, and it's a little more adult. A little more.
yeah, slightly.
I mean, definitely, they haven't really, they've made a point not to release any rated R Marvel movies. But the thing that, like, really gets me is I'm not sure if it was, like, worth the R-rated title. Like, it seemed more like that was just for the language, not necessarily for, like, the gore. Right.
Yeah.
I felt like they didn't really go as gory as they could have been, given that they were, like, given all this freedom. I think that's what people really wanted to see. Yeah. Was like, you know, Deadpool like actually kills people. So people, I mean, as sick as that sound, wants to see that. I think we cared less about his potty mouth versus, I can't believe I said potty mouth, versus like the violence that we wanted to see.
Yeah.
So in a way, I kind of felt like the R rating was kind of underutilized.
You know, actually, I think looking back on it, I could agree because I wanted more sex. There was some nudity, thank goodness. People in the Marvel movies don't really have like adult relationships, so it was nice that there was a semblance of one in this movie, and that was sort of the focus of the movie in some ways. But
I think so much of the humor too was very adolescent boy humor.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So definitely. It got the R rating, but I think it probably appealed to, you know, 17 to 19 year old young men in
fanboys. Like, yeah, the level of like masturbation jokes and things like that are just like, come on,
a
like,
lot
no
of masturbation
one our age cares
jokes.
About that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
yeah.
Let's just tackle the movie itself then in terms of like the quality of it. I'm saying I was initially kind of enjoyed it. It was digestible. You could sit through it and have a decent time, but yeah, it is like sort of puerile. Yeah.
Puerile, I think. I'm going to Google that. I need to know now.
Cuz in Latin it's puer, which means boy.
Oh. You're just so smart.
If you had to like give it a rating right now, like off the top, like what would you say?
Out of 4 stars?
Like yeah, a, 4 yeah, stars, including half stars and 0 stars. I'm 2.5, which is, yeah, 2.5, yeah. So it's like
yeah,
mediocre.
I'm at like a solid 2. I'm at
a solid 2. Damn. I give it 3. And I mean, I did say that the humor was very adolescent and, it looks like puerile. I'm consulting Google.
I also want to point out that I'm a person who loved Fast and Furious. So, like, I don't want people to think that I'm, like, some kind of, like, snob going into this. Like, I love mind-numbing action, but this was just not
do it for you
at all.
I don't know. I mean, I was sitting there laughing. Armani can attest. I was sitting there laughing so, like, a large majority of the movie I spent laughing. So, I don't know. I mean, what appealed to me about it, you touched on it, Alex, is that it was meta and it was aware of itself. And I am actually a person, unlike Armani, that I really just don't buy into all of the mind-numbing action movies, the just constant stream of Avengers and Fast and Furious and all of those. I don't buy into it at all. I never have. So for me, it was refreshing because it was just so self-aware and it was constantly making fun of itself. I mean, there's just so many examples. We can talk about more of them later, I think. But yeah, it's why, for me, it deserved the 3 stars. I just think it was a level above the 2, which sounds... I mean, I don't know. Go ahead.
If we could... Alex, if you want to hop into... Or I can do whichever. A quick like plot synopsis.
Yes.
Sure. All
like
right, fine.
Maybe like 3 sentences or less.
Okay. That's a good challenge. I'll bet I can get it down to 2 sentences. All right.
Okay.
Challenge.
Ryan Reynolds is good looking. He's a an enforcer for hire who doesn't kill people but just sort of threatens them.
Yes.
He falls in love with a hooker, and he gets terminal cancer. He undergoes, this is a run-on sentence, but it's still technically the one sentence. He undergoes a crazy treatment, and it turns out that the treatment is designed to create, to unlock a mutant gene that will trigger the healing of the cancer. But unfortunately, when he unlocks the gene, he undergoes a weird physical transformation and looks like a burn victim. And he cures the cancer, but is a mutant forever. It turns out that the guys mutating him were trying to make him into a sort of submissive mutant super soldier.
Yeah.
And he rebels and spends the rest of the movie trying to wreak vengeance on those who he thinks have wronged him. So that was really several sentences, yes. But I made it one sentence.
I want to point out something in the plot that actually did not make sense. The whole idea was like, yeah, we're going to inject you with the serum that's going to trigger your hidden mutant gene. They didn't really know what it was going to be, right? It could have been anything.
Yeah.
Like, it really could have been something that didn't cure the cancer. Like, what if it was like, you know, what if he got, like, for example, got, like, Kitty Pryde's powers and just, like, could go through things. Like, that wouldn't really fix his, like, terminal illness.
Yeah.
It would have really worked against them. So they really didn't explain how much control they had over his transformation.
At all.
And for what it seemed to me, like, everything just seemed to be a kind of shot in the dark. Like, in the first X-Men, they noted that, like, sometimes you have to go through something kind of traumatic to trigger your mutation.
Right.
But usually it's, like, something emotional. They never said you had to be, like, basically
tortured.
Killed, near, you know, beaten near death several times for something to happen. So that I didn't really understand. Like, all this kind of seemed unnecessary. Yeah.
Well, and didn't they they had this whole factory of people, or that really creepy warehouse where they were keeping all the people that they were trying to mutate? What was up with that? I mean, did they have proof that these people would come out? Like, who else were did they ever show any mutants that came out of this process? Any other people that they...
Well, we kind of got a sneak peek at when he first goes in there and you see the person with the spikes on their back.
Oh, yeah.
And we also saw a very quick shot of, like, someone, another mutant with, like, a slave collar on, like, being put back into, like, their cage kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they really didn't further explain, like, A, how they control them effectively, B, how they even can prove that their treatment is effective. Yeah. Like, it seems like you'd kill someone before you'd guarantee a mutation, which seems like a waste of
resources
at that point.
Right.
And everyone's time. Yeah, like, you can't, in the first round of torture, if you can't give a mutant, then, like, obviously we need to reevaluate, like,
your strategy.
Procedures. Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is not, that's a, like, you're really just failing and getting lucky every once in a while at this point.
It's true. And how do they make them, submissive? Do they lobotomize them, or is it, like, a mild lobotomy? Like, it's not really touched on at all.
Is it a shock collar? Like, and for the people, like, who are going through those treatments, like, they probably don't have that much to lose. So you can't threaten them with, like, oh, I'll murder your family. They probably don't have one. Or, like I don't see the leverage here. So, I don't know.
Ryan Reynolds had his girlfriend, and that was breaking him up inside. So I guess there's that.
But, like, if he got cancer and didn't have his girlfriend, like, what could they have done to make control him? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Also going back into that, they never really, okay, so Axel's powers, they never really quite explain. They say that he, like, has better reflexes and, like, doesn't feel pain, but, like, that doesn't stop the fact that, like, if someone punches you full force and, like, breaks your jaw, your body's gonna be messed up, even if you don't feel it. Like, in a way, wouldn't that be, like, a negative power?
Yeah, so that's the main bad guy. I don't know who plays him, but...
He was great. I liked him a lot as an actor.
He's actually also, he was the original Dario Naharis in Game of Thrones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was. He's played by Ed Skrein.
Ed Skrein.
Yeah. Yeah, he's also in The Transporter. It's random.
Oh, he's the new Transporter guy. Well, that's not going to last, though. I mean, that movie was a huge flop, right?
You can't replace Jason Statham, so I don't know why they're trying to.
Yeah, I'm not going to see a Transporter movie without Jason Statham. It's not like he can't do it anymore. Has he outgrown the role or something? Is he a serious actor now?
No, I think they just can't afford him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It was a totally budgetary decision. They decided, you know what, we're not going to pay him $8 million to do this. We're going to pay this rando, Ed Screen, Scrine, whatever.
Sexy like rando.
Oh, also, going into this,
Jason Statham's sexy, you know.
Yeah. Going back to Emily's earlier point about how the movie made fun of itself a lot, I was kind of actually more irritated than, like, enjoy the fact that they pointed out that there's, like, two C-level X-Men in the entire movie. And when they showed, like, you know, the... Like, they showed, like, Xavier School and everything. And I'm like, you guys can afford extras in the background? Like, you're going to tell me in this entire house there's supposed to be, like, you know, roughly 100-plus people? Like, we see no one else?
Yeah. I thought it was funny that they pointed it out, though. And I don't really, personally, I know you're more of a fan, Armani, of the X-Men than I am. I don't really care about them. I don't mind not seeing them.
You're just like, yeah, I could have gone the whole movie without seeing anyone.
Although, no, I didn't mind these two. These two were pretty funny. Like, the do-gooder Russian... Steel guy and the Sinead O'Connor angry teen who had the really funny name.
Yeah.
Which was...
I have to believe it was...
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brianna Hildebrand. But, oh, Colossus is the other guy.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were fun. I mean, I think it is nice when we still get to see other X-Men that aren't just, like, the main squad that we focus on. But you would think that Marvel would have, like, more flexibility within its own franchise to somehow borrow more elements from other movies. Well, like,
that's the thing, right? You're like, talking about this too, right? The Fox thing. It's 20th Century Fox. Before Marvel was Marvel, they had deals with different studios. So they had, like, the deal with Sony, and that's why they keep making Spider-Man movies. And they had the deal with 20th Century Fox for X-Men. So those are, like, separate. And then also for Blade, for New Line. So they're all, like, separate things. And now, you know, 20th Century Fox has the X-Men. Sony still, I think actually they negotiate so that Marvel has creative control of Spider-Man now, but they get a cut. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Fox actually has the X-Men, which is why they keep pumping out X-Men movies, because if they wait too long, the rights go back to Marvel, and then Marvel has them in the official Marvel wheelhouse.
So, oh, okay, so I see they're now in like this legal, like tangled web of like what they can and can't use at this point now.
Right, so Fox was generous enough to give them the two X-Men or whatever.
You brought up Blade, which reminded me of my favorite line from the movie. When
go on.
Ed Skrein and the angrier version of Rosie O'Donnell walk into the bar in black, and the bartender says, "Have fun at your midnight showing of Blade 2. I'm not sure why, but that just had me rolling.
That was pretty good.
It was so good.
Oh, that was TJ Miller, too.
Yeah.
From Silicon Valley. That guy's hilarious.
Yeah, that's where I'd seen him. I knew he was familiar, but yeah, no, he's great. He was great in that that character.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, so Gina Carano is the angry Rosie O'Donnell, and she's they've been trying to make her like she was sort of Ronda Rousey before Ronda Rousey. She was a legit mixed martial arts fighter. Oh, wow. And
the other Fast and Furious 6.
Yeah, she was the good guy that turns into a bad guy. Mm-hmm. That sort of swaps with Michelle Rodriguez, who's a bad guy turning into a good guy in that movie.
She had actually one of the most amazing fight scenes with Michelle Rodriguez in that stairwell, though.
Oh yeah, and like the subway, like
probably my top ever fucking fight scene ever seen. Like that is hands down my favorite ever.
Nah, but that's a good girl
it was
fight.
So well choreographed. No, as far as like women getting to fight each other, that's the one thing I love about Fast and Furious is like they allow women to be badasses, which also they allowed them to do in Deadpool. Though I don't, his girlfriend, well, you know, she did okay. You know, I expected, you know, maybe a little bit more, but for the most part, that I did appreciate that women were allowed to be strong in this movie as well.
Yeah, she was okay. The one thing that's weird to me, I don't know how you guys feel about this. Actually, this is a good thing to discuss anyway, is, you know, in action movies, a lot of the times nowadays, they'll sort of be PC about it and have women fight women. And so, like, they don't really have men fighting women because it feels sort of weird.
I actually like how they tackled it. I think it's more fair when it's more of an obvious, like, this person can hold their own. It's kind of going back to Brienne and the Hound fighting in Game of Thrones. Because, like, you know, Brienne, much like Gina was in this movie, like, a hardcore badass. Like, she is strong. Like, the only person who could realistically even fight her was going to be Colossus. There's no one else who could stand up against her. So I think at that point, I mean, even in the movie, Colossus made the point of saying, like, oh, I don't want to fight you.
Yeah.
And he wasn't being, like, overly, like, you know, aggressive towards her. It's just, like, I need to stop you from hurting everyone else, which I think is more justifiable than just seeing a male character just like like overpower woman. If he just like punched her once and just completely overpowered her and that'd have been it, I think there'd have been more issues with it. But I think because she was such like a good like match for him, it felt more like, you know, less offensive. I don't know, Emily, what do you think?
Right. Is what's her name again?
Angel Dust.
Angel Dust. It's a weird, kind of a dumb name. I don't remember hearing it all. I thought it was, what was my reaction? I mean, I watched it. I was thinking, well, she's really beating his ass. This doesn't make sense. I don't really get, okay, so she has super strength. I get that. But the fact that she was not at all like injured by punching a metal, you know, giant man. That was confusing.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to look into it too deeply, to be honest. I mean, I generally do look at things like that and analyze them pretty deeply, but I think at that point in the movie, I'd already suspended so much of my, like, critical thinking, which may or may not be a bad thing, but, yeah, there were a lot of moments where it was just like, oh, God, looking back, those lines were so just, like, you know, misogynist and dumb. But I think, I don't know, Colossus just didn't, he was just like an iron giant, like a big friendly giant character. And
yeah,
the fact that he was being, you know, completely subdued by Angel Dust was kind of cool in a way. It just made her look more badass, even if she was a terrible person who was torturing or co-torturing people.
Right.
Which, yeah, I know we already talked about this, but yeah, going back to just that bizarre situation in the warehouse with all these, you know, pre-mutants, it just, yeah, it didn't really check out at all why they did that. And how did they have, you know, so many people so committed? There were like tons of people working in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were they paying them in, too?
It's a summer internship.
It's a summer internship. Gonna get credits.
What were they even doing? Like, they had no evil scheme. Like, they were like smuggling nukes or something. But you barely know what's going on. You don't know what their evil scheme is. Not that it really matters, I guess, but still.
Maybe it was just so, I'm thinking maybe it was so skeletally thought out that for a reason, like, they didn't want us to look too deeply into it. It was a shoddily constructed part of the plot because they wanted to keep your focus on the character of Deadpool and his charm and his wit and all that. I don't know, though. It could have been better in that respect, for sure. But I don't know. I still just found it so enjoyable overall that things like that did not faze me too much.
How did you guys think about, like, Ryan Reynolds in this movie?
Alex, you want to go first?
I don't know. You guys are ladies, so I'll let you go.
Did we just talk about equality? We just, like, literally just talked about equality, like, 5 seconds ago.
What I'm saying is I don't care for Ryan Reynolds at all. I don't understand why he's appealing. And, I mean, I understand objectively he's good looking, but, like, but that's it, right? Like, there's nothing. No. He has nothing. Like, he's not.
I think he does. Go ahead.
It's hard. It's super hard for me to... See, Ryan Reynolds definitely gets typecast a lot in these kind of movies. And I think with Green Lantern, we proved that his humor in a superhero movie cannot carry the movie.
Hmm.
I get it. He's snarky. It's fun. It, at some point, the jokes kind of become tiring a little bit. I think he's okay. He definitely makes a comment in the movie about how, like, Ryan Reynolds just, like, you know, looks good. And yeah. Does not have any true acting capabilities as far as I've been made aware of.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see him cast in Pride and Prejudice. I just personally don't think he's capable of, like, pulling off anything like that. Aside from just being, you know, looking good, being, like, a smart ass in, like, a brainless action movie.
I don't know. I still... Okay, so here's my take on Ryan Reynolds. Obviously, a babe. Okay. And I appreciate his snark as a just a general human being too. I don't know if you guys follow his Twitter, but he has some really, really, really great tweets that are just like really, I mean, they demonstrate that he's an intelligent person. And I think that is why I like him. I see him as, you know, he's not a brilliant, there's nothing really terribly brilliant about his humor. Mm-hmm. But if you look, I mean, you can just tell in the way that he delivers his lines that he's smart. And I do appreciate that in him as an actor. And I also, I don't know. I mean, I never saw, okay, full disclosure, I never saw Green Lantern. I know I already talked about how I don't like action movies, and this is, you know, coming back to bite me in the ass. But I thought he did great. I thought he was really great in the role. I thought he was, you know, he was funny. He was charismatic. Babin. Maybe a little annoying at times. Maybe a little bit, but I don't know. I like him.
You know, I actually thought he was okay in this because he was doing the best Ryan Reynolds he could do. He's a very specific kind of guy. And yeah, this is, I agree with you, Emily, that this is like what he should be doing is dumb action movie stuff where he can be kind of snarky and cute.
I mean, is,
that's sort of it for
is
him.
Is it kind of like, I mean, with that kind of acting though, that kind of one note, I can only be this kind of person. I mean, I guess it works for a lot of, if we consider him more of a comedian in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, it doesn't, it's not going to offer anything else as far as like actual ability to act, you know, at that point, is he acting? Is he just being Ryan Reynolds, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the real, I mean, you know, I guess it's what, you know, depends on what they want out of the movie itself.
Right. I think that the movie wanted exactly what he gave it.
Yeah.
And he delivered 100%, and whether he could thrive in another like genre, we seem to be having a consensus that he couldn't really, but we also don't know. Yeah. I mean, he could grow. That happens all the time. Actors grow, actors change, actors evolve.
Maybe
I don't know
he'll do
how
like
often.
Revenant too. And then we'll just
that's not a hard performance, honestly. Like all you have to do is sort of look cold
and scream and cry good. Did you guys see the Onion article about Leo? Hopes he screamed and cried good enough in The Revenant
well,
to
I mean,
get
that's
Oscar.
What they did for Deadpool. Like, we hope that Ryan Reynolds was as much of an asshole as he possibly could be enough to carry
an adorable,
this movie.
Lovable asshole. Yeah.
As far as like that kind of attitude towards Deadpool itself, which definitely carried on into like its marketing campaign, which I consider like extremely successful. Do you think that this is going to set a precedent for like other superhero movies, or specifically like Marvel movies?
Well, I think that I think Marvel movies are reaching a threshold where at a certain point people are going to get sick of them. You know, they're going to try to do crossover stuff. They're going to get a little desperate. They're going to have Spider-Man that Marvel has.
I mean, I think
with
the Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay,
yeah,
they already have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to combine, but that's not Marvel. Marvel, it is Marvel, but it's a superhero movie and it's a Marvel character. But now Marvel itself as a production house has Spider-Man, so it can reintegrate Spider-Man into like the Avengers. And I don't know what the deal is with the Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four is another one that's, I think, Fox owned. That's why they rebooted it, so that the rights wouldn't revert back to Marvel.
Oh, dear God, that Fantastic Four.
There's going to be another reboot of Fantastic Four in a couple of years, I'm sure. But yeah, I think that hopefully audiences will respond a little bit more selectively with these movies.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four flopping was good. Green Lantern flopping was a positive thing, and that was a couple years ago. But yeah, it'd be nice if the success of Deadpool bred a little bit more. I wish that it set a little bit more out of the box. Like I wish that it had fight scenes that weren't like the climactic fight scene at the end is all this like fake digital stuff, and I wasn't really engaged.
I think we actually have proven in the past few years, especially with like Gods of Egypt flopping, I mean, aside from like the other issues with it, that we don't want to see like a full-on CGI action movie. Like that's why Jupiter Ascending failed, and that's why Mad Max did so good, because they used very little, you know, way less CGI, you know? So it makes a difference.
You know, technically the thing about Mad Max that's funny is that it didn't actually make back its budget domestically. It cost $150 million and it made
$138 million. But currently,
Gods of Egypt
cost $120 million and has only recouped $14 million. So,
yeah, that's not going to...
I mean, I'm sure Mad Max will make it back up in DVD sales and whatnot easily, so they're...
Yeah, and worldwide, yeah. It's fine. They're doing fine.
They're doing fine.
Not worried about them. They're doing all right. I want to touch on something that we talked about earlier, Alex. Yes. Audiences responding to Deadpool and like the kind of psychology behind that and the way that people appreciated it because it was so aware of itself and aware of the idiocy of these movies that it makes, that Marvel makes. It was just like very self-deprecating in a way, but it didn't stray from all of the gimmicks that make the comic book movies so popular. Like, it utilized them, but it also was aware of how dumb they are. Like, the superhero landing. That part got me. I loved that. Like, look, she's about to make a superhero landing. It's gonna happen. Oh, there it is. I liked that. And, like I was telling you earlier, I think the way that people responded to it, like, they generally have enjoyed it. They're laughing at it. They love the credits in the beginning. It's still a Marvel movie, you know? But at the same time, it's ragging on itself. And also, I mean, there's so many other times or moments in the movie when it makes fun of, well, X-Men, for one. It just went completely in on, and like several times made fun of the X-Men movies. I think it did it. I wouldn't have expected it to like completely deviate from what it knows works for audiences. I didn't have that expectation for it at all.
Yeah.
But I'm torn now. Now I'm thinking it could have probably benefited from having some escape from those tropes as well.
That's the thing too, is like they're so by the numbers that it's just, they lack some creativity, and the fact that, yeah, they tweak themselves without really doing too much that's so subversive, right, besides being aware that they're, you know, fitting the tropes, it's a little frustrating.
Right.
And it makes it, but I thought I was going to be really bored, and I wasn't. I was engaged. It the fact that it was meta saved it from being just another movie.
Right.
But it just wasn't. Yeah, it just could have been way better in terms of the way that it approached that stuff.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I wanted more sex and violence, I think, honestly, you know?
If you're going to make it rated R, like, I need more language, I need more blood, I need boobs. Like, give me these things.
When they shot people in the face, they wouldn't show the shooting in the face. They would pan away. So reserved, you know?
I'm making maybe a leap in comparison here, maybe improper analogy, but I feel like this kind of conversation is universal across a lot of different forms of media. And I, for some reason, just thought about Beyonce and how people would, I just remember there being a lot of discourse around whether or not she was actually subversive and actually challenging society or social norms, with, most specifically with her album of it, which is crazy. I think it just was called Beyonce, the one that dropped Surprise out of nowhere in late 2013. And I remember people saying, well, at first it was like, this is incredible. This is so bold. This is so revolutionary. She's coming out and saying she's feminist. And then came all of the people saying, no, she's not really feminist because look, she's still buying into, or she's still, you know, got a perfect body and is all this stuff. Like, it's just, it didn't go all the way. And like, it's because Beyonce knows, and all the people who work for her, like the Beyonce franchise knows, that they couldn't sell Beyonce without her looking, you know, beautiful. She still has to look beautiful.
So you're like, saying that, like, if because of the same, like, kind of scenario, like, yeah, we can make fun of, like, in Deadpool can, like, make fun of all these other tropes all we want, but we know at the end of the day people want to see this, and we don't feel right. that the movie will be as supported
exactly.
by like the audience if like we don't do these things. We want the best of both worlds in these scenarios. Like, we want it to, like, yeah. you know, yeah. give the middle finger to being PC and like being, you know, rated PG-13. Same time though, we still want that hero landing.
Right. Yeah, we want to hear Beyonce talk about how pretty hurts and have her attempt to take down, you know, beauty pageants in that whole video of hers. But at the same time, she still looks awesome. It's a whole nother discussion. But do you guys see the parallels? I hope.
Yeah.
Alex, what do you think?
I see what you're saying. Well, my thing is, I don't want more Marvel movies. You know, I'm happy with there never being another Marvel movie again. But, like, if they have to keep existing, it can be Deadpool. It can be stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, I'd really prefer it to be Marvel Blade, free, you know? World.
We should really sign a change.org petition for that.
I would sign that as many times as I could under as many... I'd falsify my ID, you know, which people don't like in certain states, as many times as I could to get on that petition. But yeah.
I swear to God, if they make another Spider-Man movie, I might actually drown a puppy. I just can't. I can't.
Oh, God. Anymore. You could just protest no need for by, that like, kind jumping of off the action. Building and saying, where's Spider-Man now?
I'm going to throw the puppy off the building and be like, where's Spider-Man now? That's
yeah. It.
It's just a lot of violence involved.
Where's Spider-Man
puppy.
Now? Oh, God. Can you imagine the news headlines for that?
I could see the split screen on, like, CNN for, like, well, why wasn't Spider-Man there? Doesn't he care? Then someone else is like, why would you hurt a puppy? You know, like, very, like, opposing viewpoints there. I'd get Al Sharpton involved quickly, though. I know that defense.
Yeah, puppy yeah. rights. The big takeaway that I wanted to get from this is, would you see five more of these? Because they will make five
no,
more of these.
No, no.
Five more Deadpools? Are you shitting me?
The thing is, like, they're going to make these things into perpetuity unless audiences stop going, you know?
Yes,
like,
true.
The X-Men movies. They've made, like, seven or eight of those,
yeah.
you know? And, like,
yeah.
they'll spin it off, whatever. This is technically an X-Men spinoff, too, of an X-Men spinoff. This is a spinoff of the Wolverine movie, the first one, called Wolverine, 2009. Ryan Reynolds played Deadpool, so it was kind of a reboot spinoff of that movie, which in itself was a prequel spinoff of the X-Men
so
movies.
Meta.
You know what I mean?
So
this
excited.
Shit's gonna keep going. They're gonna make a fucking
right.
Colossus spinoff movie. They're gonna make a
oh my god,
you know, Warhead movie. Whatever, like teenagers.
Dear God, I hope they don't make a Colossus movie. I swear to God, if we have to go to some like cliche like Russian that? Like army camp in the middle of like the snow, I will. Oh my god, be
drown
so
more puppies.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. It's gonna happen. You're right. I wouldn't. I would go probably see one more and boycott the rest.
Unless that one's a step up.
Sure. Where could... Okay, so let's think about where could it go? Where... What could potential plots be? Now that he's got the girl back. Right?
I mean, the only thing would be, like, if he, like, reluctantly, like, teams up with, like, X-Men again or, like, has to do something against that organization from changing other mutants, maybe?
Didn't it get burned down or didn't it get
I mean do you think
it
really get burned down?
It did,
you know.
No, you're right,
the facility
right,
did
right.
The facility did, but not their organization.
Yeah, like that's just like you burned down one McDonald's, there's still a bunch of other McDonald's.
Yeah, they pop up in these movies. There's no consequences because people can die and just come back.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. Samuel Jackson dies, comes back. Clark Gregg dies and comes back.
That's true. It's
like it doesn't matter. None of this matters, you know.
Level.
And even if they kill them, they'll reboot it, you know, with a new actor later
right.
on. It's just, yeah, it's not going to die. Not every franchise, not every movie series is James Bond, you know. Some movie series, like, you know, James Bond is a reaction to a certain type of British thinking as, like, world police. Yeah, just the British, it's basically like a colonial movie
it
about
is.
British people policing the world.
Absolutely.
You know, and, like, Deadpool doesn't have a point, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really about anything.
I would argue that... I mean, as much as I despise the constant flow of superhero movies, I think at least, I mean, I remember really enjoying the original X-Men, and it was because it had substance, and it was because it was about so much. I mean, it isn't anymore. Now it's about which cool, you know, effects you can do. But it was about, you know, social ostracism, primarily.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a lot of other really heavy themes, which I think...
Well, it's like nodding back into X-Men was really like, a lot of people feel like talking about like social issues in America, like with like the civil rights movement and like that kind of thing, like
right.
accepting other people's differences.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and also MLK and Malcolm X are, as we know, totally... Well, Malcolm X is totally vilified by most of mainstream society, and MLK is seen as kind of like the, you know, the force for good in the civil rights movement, even though they have so many of their ideas have crossover. And also, MLK was way more radical than people would like to admit. But wasn't there, I remember reading somewhere that the whole...
Magneto versus Professor Xavier.
It's based on that relationship between those two men. Well, which I think is
pointing off that, then, like, if we were to kind of make